Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we all remember how the Iranian protests of last summer were referred to as the Twitter Revolution, a two-week period during which the social media tool was critical for disseminating information and building real-world momentum. Flash forward to this winter and another crisis in another country, the Haiti earthquake. In a new piece in Foreign Policy magazine, Joshua Keating argues that because of how useful it was in Iran, both the news media and regular folks turned to Twitter immediately after the earthquake struck. But Keating thinks Twitter failed to serve as a useful post-disaster tool, and he joins us now to discuss. Joshua Keating, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Andy Carvin, senior strategist for social media at NPR. It's his job to think about how new media tools can be used in breaking news situations. Andy, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
Joshua, let's start with your take. Why do you think Twitter wasn't as useful after Haiti as it was during the Iranian protests?
Well, I should say, first of all, that I am a fan of Twitter and a user of it, and this is not a knock on the technology as a whole. But like many people, I turned to Twitter soon after the earthquake for breaking updates. And what I found is that a lot of the information that was being provided really wasn't that useful. One, it was too localized and too specific when what most readers, aside from those directly involved in the situation, want is a more broad overview. And two, it was very difficult to verify what was accurate. And indeed, in the days and weeks following the earthquake, there were a number of false rumors that swept through Twitter about the earthquake.
And let's be clear that we're talking mainly about the usefulness for those of us here in the U.S. On the takeaway this morning, there was a discussion about how radio played such a key role in disseminating information within Haiti right after the quake, when the power was down and many residents don't have access to things like Twitter anyway. So new technology has a limited audience, yes?
Yeah, so, within the situation itself, many people didn't have access to Twitter, but what I'm really focusing on in the piece is its use for news consumers around the world who maybe turn to Twitter now increasingly as their first read in a way they didn't in, say, Hurricane
right.
Katrina. And I think that what we're finding is that people increasingly have to turn to aggregator sites like blogs like the New York Times, The Lead, which are compiling Twitter, the best Twitter feeds. So really, Twitter in many ways may be more useful for traditional media sources who can sort of compile and aggregate
right.
these than for users.
And of course, there's almost no comparison between Iran and Haiti to begin with. Iran is such a wealthier country and therefore would have so much more access to this kind of technology. But there's also a darker side that you point out, which is the amount of misinformation that can be spread on Twitter. And we saw this in Iran, where counter-protesters were sending out false reports. And in Haiti, false rumors about relief initiatives were spread as well. How much did this undercut the usefulness of the tool, and does it in any situation?
Well, there are a couple disturbing stories. There were false rumors that UPS was providing free shipping of goods to Haiti, and another that a few U.S. airlines were flying doctors to the country for free. And the truth, of course, was that no commercial flights were being allowed into Haiti at that point. So even if these companies had wanted to do that, they wouldn't have been able to. And the companies were just deluged with calls from people who wanted to take advantage of these false offers and were maybe distracted from actual things they could have been doing that would have been more useful.
Let's bring in Andy Carvin from NPR. Andy, I gather you've been thinking lately about trust maps, tools that let us determine who on Twitter to pay attention to, yes?
Well, I was really interested in the weeks and months after Iran's protest to get a sense of what type of disinformation campaigns were taking place, and it was clear that there were large numbers of people, whether they were associated with the government or not, there were still large numbers of people in Iran who were trying to use Twitter to misdirect people, you know, everything from saying, oh, don't worry, there haven't been any injuries here, or maybe this protest has been canceled. That did seem to be going on a surprisingly large scale. In contrast, I actually think with what was going on in Haiti, Twitter was actually quite successful, given the circumstances, because when you look at it, there were probably around 40% of the Iranian population that's on the Internet, compared with only about 10% of the Haitian population. So they're starting with a much smaller subset of the population to begin with that could be on Twitter. But those who were on Twitter, I actually thought were quite reliable, people like Carl Pedra and the main Internet ISP down in Haiti were extremely important lifelines of information. And the rumors that were spreading regarding UPS and some of the airlines, you weren't seeing people from Haiti spread that information as you were in the case of Iran. Instead, you were seeing that being spread in the U.S. by, you know, very well-meaning people who saw these notes on Twitter or on Facebook or elsewhere on the Internet, trying to pass it along when, in many cases, it wasn't true. But interestingly, because so many of the rumors that were spreading around Haiti had to do with U.S. companies, all it took was getting on the phone or sending an email to a company representative to disprove it one way or another. Whereas in Iran, it was hard for anyone to get accurate information because reporters were being kicked out. The country was getting closed off telecommunications-wise. And so while there were rumors spreading in Haiti, I found it a lot easier to debunk them than the rumors that were spreading around Iran.
And talk about these so-called crisis camps that you helped organize right after the earthquake. Here was an attempt to develop social media tools, not just Twitter, to actually develop things that could be useful in Haiti?
Well, the idea behind it was to take advantage of the goodwill that was pouring forth from so many people online who wanted to help, but specifically trying to tap into people with technical skills, so people who have the ability to create interactive maps or database programmers or software designers and the like. And this has been going on for a number of disasters, going all the way back at least to the Boxing Day tsunami 5 years ago. But this time around, it had a different twist. Not only were people trying to interact with each other and develop projects via social media, they started organizing real-world events in places like New York and Boston and D.C. and London and Calgary and all sorts of other places where people would get together and have these hackathons for 8-10 hours at a time. And so social media was used to coordinate these real-world volunteer events for software programmers to come together, and they built things such as one of the most accurate high-resolution maps of Haiti that relief workers on the ground are now using on their GPS devices. They created databases of what NGOs were working and what they were doing down there, tools that would allow these NGOs to share information with each other, so if one of them needed something, they could ask the others very easily for it. And they also even started using Twitter by trying to create a set of keywords they would encourage relief workers to use when they were sending out their tweets, so they could map exactly where these people were on the ground and what they were requesting from other NGOs. And so you've more than a dozen projects have been developed over the last couple of weeks by these volunteers, and they're really targeted to be used by relief workers rather than those of us who are sitting comfortably in the U.S. watching remotely.
So, Joshua Keating, do you think that this is something that could be built on for future crises, whether they're political crises or natural disasters or whatever?
Well, I of course think there's potential to use these tools, and we should look at all online tools as ways to coordinate relief efforts. What I'm primarily talking about is its use by news consumers around the world. And what I found in following the Twitter feeds from Haiti, some of which were providing very reliable information, must be said, but really, there's a certain amount of detail that news consumers really need, and what I found very quickly is most people, after initially using Twitter, were that I spoke to were switching back to traditional news sources that were aggregating and filtering these tweets and some of the ways that were just discussed, rather than relying directly on Twitter as a source.
Andy, before you go, we have Beth Novak and U.S. Chief Technology Officer Anish Chopra on the show later. Novak is President Obama's Chief Transparency Officer, to talk about the Open Government Initiative, which requires government agencies to post their data online. I'm curious, as someone who thinks about the use of new media for a large news organization, how do you see NPR using these tools? Is this actually going to make government more transparent?
I think it has the potential of allowing us to get a deeper understanding of certain aspects of government and some of the nuances that might otherwise fall through the cracks. But in order to do that, it requires that you work with people who've got the technical skills to take this data, sort it out, and visualize it in creative ways. Because if you just access the data raw, it's just going to be a mess of information. And that's why I'm really fascinated by some of the activities that have happened with the crisis camps over the last few weeks, because some of the best activities that have come out of it have been people taking raw data from NGOs, relief organizations, the UN, and others, and interpreting them and layering them in creative ways that people hadn't done before. And so if you start getting similar types of data coming out of the U.S. for all sorts of different aspects of government, and then have people with the right technical skills to visualize that content, I think the rest of us might start learning things about our government and agencies that we didn't know before.
Joshua Keating, anything to add to that in our last 20 seconds?
No. Thanks for having me.
All right. Joshua Keating's article in Foreign Affairs, Foreign Policy Magazine, forgive me, argues that the news media and regular folk turned to Twitter immediately after the earthquake struck, but quickly away. And Andy Carvin, Senior Strategist for Social Media at NPR. Thank you both very much.
Thanks again, Brian.
And later in the program, we will have President Obama's Chief Technology Officer and Chief Transparency Officer. And we have on our webpage right now a link to some specific government spending data that just became available. We're inviting you to check it out and take part in a simple crowdsourcing experiment, which involves entering your zip code and see what the government is spending there and on what. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show.